This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Almost 600,000 Wisconsinites care for an aging parent, spouse, or another loved one, providing medical, financial, and day-to-day care to allow that person to remain at home. This year, AARP is launching an effort to help family caregivers, lobbying for tax credits and other legislative changes to help those who care for the state's elderly. Joining us to talk about the role of family caregivers are Jim Flaherty, Communications Director for AARP Wisconsin, Helen Marks Dix, State Issues Advocacy Director for the organization, and Peggy Herbeck, supervisor at La Crosse County Aging and Disability Resource Center. And so first, I just want to, you know, start the conversation by talking about who is a family caregiver. And Jim, I wonder if you can talk a little bit about kind of who fits that role.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as you mentioned, we've got almost 600,000 of them in Wisconsin. They provide about $7 billion a year, that's billion with a B, in unpaid care for loved ones. It's a very European model. You know, you bring in your loved ones who are elderly and need care, you bring them into the home, you set up, retrofit your home to have them live with you. In a lot of cases, children are going to their parents' home where they're living independently, the apartment or condo, wherever it is, because we know that folks want to remain living in their homes and communities as long as possible. They're not saying, please get me into a nursing home as soon as possible. They want to remain living at home. So what do? Everything. You know, they help assist with bathing, they assist with meal preparation, bill paying, medication management, even nursing type skills. A lot of times untrained, just doing the best they can. So we always call these Wisconsin's kind of unsung heroes, if you will, because they're providing all this care while also working full-time, raising children, trying to manage their own household. So what we're saying at AARP Wisconsin is let's throw a lifeline to these unpaid family caregivers and make sure they've got the support they need.
Peggy, I wonder how often you get to encounter family caregivers. How common would you say this model is in the La Crosse area?
I would say every single day we get calls from family caregivers asking, are there any supports in the community? What do I do next? I'm just a little bit lost. We have 9 trained options counselors, professionals, social workers that go out and sit down with people and just talk about what's going on in their particular life. Every family is different, and everyone may need a little bit of different type of support.
Yeah, what are some of the types of supports they often reach out looking for?
At times, the person needs just a little bit of help with some of the more daily tasks of chores, such as housekeeping, laundry, and then it can move into assistance with personal care, such as an elderly couple. They're doing quite well, but maybe the spouse just can't assist that person in and out of a bathtub, so they might need a little bit of help with personal cares. Or driving becomes an issue, transportation to the grocery store or doctor. Nutrition sometimes is very, very important, and they may partake in home-delivered meals or go to a congregate meal site and eat with others and have that support of the community.
Helen, do you feel like this is becoming a more common way to care for aging loved ones? Is this kind of an increasing trend, or has this always maybe been a model?
Well, I think it's always been a model. What's made it different now is that we have 10,000 people a day turning age 65. And so the number of people that are going to meet the definition of aging in our society is going to increase in numbers. Now, I want to make it real clear that a lot of the care that's given to older people comes from other older people. It really is a support system. But, you know, when we talk about family caregivers, we're really talking about unpaid family caregivers. And there really is a model. And, you know, we talked a little about what you do when you're a caregiver, but, you know, you kind of go into it backwards. It starts out real simple. You just drive mom to church, or you drive them to the grocery store, and the next thing you know, it's medication management, and the next thing you know, it's transfers, and you know, you have one good medical crisis, and then it's all kinds of medical management. So a lot of people don't think of themselves as caregivers that really are.
I wonder how that
you know, I wonder if people feel that they are maybe ill-equipped to provide the care that they are forced to sometimes. You know, we talk about some of these nursing skills or, you know, assisting in more, you know, medical or personal care items. Peggy, I wonder if, you know, there's a need for helping people know how to provide those tasks.
And that's very true. People just don't realize what innate skills that they do have. And Helen is absolutely correct. It just grows slowly, the caregiving role, that it starts very, very small. And then all of a sudden, you're almost doing it full time every single day. And that's when the issues with your profession come up. And something that the ADRC is trying to do is reach out to employers and help employers to understand that the person needs some support so that they can devote time to their family, but also then come back refreshed and be able to perform their job. Learning how to do the tasks, there are home health agencies where nurses can come in and really show almost hand over hand how to do very medically involved tasks, and people kind of learn as they go. When you have a paid caregiver coming in, maybe offering a little bit of additional support, they, of course, are trained by their personal care agency how to perform a transfer or assist with bathing or dressing. But for that individual caregiver, oftentimes it's just kind of learning as they go. But there are supports out there. If they reach out and ask, it's so gradual that people just don't know sometimes who to call. So we're hoping they'll call the Aging and Disability Resource Center, and then we can help them find the folks that will assist them.
And the CARE Act, which AARP is supporting and we are confident is going to be introduced, and I'm sure by the time this airs, we will have introduced it in Wisconsin, actually requires hospitals, when a person is being discharged, if the person is willing to identify their caregiver, then the hospital would have to do some training to help people understand what the medical care that's the follow-up is and what their responsibilities are. I think that really helps caregivers because they're very, very stressed. They haven't been trained, and if at least they have some level of confidence that they know what they're doing, it makes a tremendous difference. So the CARE Act is really based around that assumption that when people are dealing with medical things, they really should get some training from the medical facility that the person is being discharged from.
And this issue of family caregiving, it kind of has been floating underneath the surface for forever. Families have been providing care for a loved one since the beginning of time, but it's what's bubbling up now is that these folks need support. They need help. They need training, as you guys alluded to, and that's what some of the legislation we're pushing for. Helen mentioned the CARE Act at the state level. At the federal level, there's something called the RAISE Act, and that stands for Recognize, Assist, Include, Support, and Engage. That's the acronym, Family Caregivers Act. So the RAISE Family Caregivers Act, it has already been passed in the U.S. Senate, and it is in committee in the U.S. House, and Senator Tammy Baldwin is one of the main proponents of this legislation. It basically says, hey, let's get everybody at the table. Let's get all stakeholders together, government, community, and have a national conversation about caregiving, because this Wisconsin's getting older, the U.S. is getting older, and these folks are going to need care. The RAISE Act says, let's get together and have a conversation about this.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the role of family caregivers and how the state and federal government can better support them. We're here with Jim Flaherty and Helen Marks-Dix from AARP Wisconsin and Peggy Herbeck from La Crosse County's ADRC. I just want to take a step back. You guys have introduced two of the pieces of legislation AARP is supporting. And I just want to, you know, have Jim, you talk a little bit about why AARP is focusing on family caregivers in this legislative season.
Boy, nothing could be more important. You know, we travel around the state and we talk to folks, and this is a crisis, and people don't understand it. You know, especially up in northern Wisconsin, folks are trying to care for loved ones. Those counties are getting older. Young folks aren't sticking around. They're taking off. And something just as simple as providing respite care for a caregiver to say, hey, can I have a couple of hours to go see a movie and have somebody step in for me? That's a need that it persists all across the entire country, and it's just not being talked about. We're saying we've got to raise our voices on this. We've got to make sure that caregivers are not only recognized and trained, but supported. And so there are a couple of other pieces of legislation, which Helen will talk about, that can provide some tax credits for these folks. We know that 78% of family caregivers are incurring out of their own money, out-of-pocket costs to help with caregiving. This is a sizable amount of their own money. We're saying let's get a little relief to these folks. Let's get them some tax credits so that they don't have to incur all these costs on their own. But I'm telling you, this issue is floating underneath the surface, and we're just saying we've got to bring it out now because our members are telling us this has reached a crisis level.
You have to remember that this hits all socioeconomic groups. You know, we often talk about family care, which is a low-income long-term care program here in Wisconsin. But there is no program for middle and upper-income people. And the people who so cheerfully brought long-term care insurance, while people are pulling out of the industry, it turned out to be more expensive than people realized. The benefits turned out to be much narrower than people recognized. And it was terribly expensive. So you're looking at something that affects all age groups, because young people are taking care of older people. It affects all socioeconomic groups, and it's a nonpartisan issue. I mean, Alzheimer's doesn't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. It just strikes.
And if you talk about cost savings, you know, everybody's like, okay, you're going to provide a $1,000 tax credit. Think about spending short-term in the future for long-term savings in the future. You know, okay, so we've got $7 billion a year of unpaid, uncompensated care being provided right now by family caregivers. If we don't support these folks, all that care is going to be moving into institutions, nursing homes and higher level institutions, which will cost much, much more than loved ones just being able to do it on their own. So this is penny wise, pound foolish. Let's get them a little bit of support on the front end. We'll reap the benefits in the long run.
Peggy, I want to hear your thoughts on this state caregivers tax credit that's being proposed by AARP.
Oh, I just think it's an excellent idea. One thing we haven't mentioned so far is that many caregivers in their 60s are providing care for their parents in their 80s, and then may also be providing care to their grandchildren at the same time. We used to talk about the sandwich generation, that young person in their 40s to 50s providing to a young family and to older parents. But now I think we've moved that sandwich generation into another age frame, and it has always been that families help each other. But the numbers, they're just growing. And there is really a shortage in direct care staff. And that is a nationwide crisis that we all worry about, we all talk about, but we don't have a solution to yet. So anything in the area of a tax credit that maybe would assist someone to pay a neighbor, a trusted friend, to do a little bit of extra for the family to keep the whole house of cards still standing up, and so that that person can continue to care for their loved one, but maybe get a little break now and then.
What are the implications of moving that sandwich generation to more of a grandparent than the parent? You know, moving that that person who's providing care for their parents and maybe grandchildren, and that person is in their 60s.
It's a whole new territory. They say 60s is the new 40s, so I guess we'll all just have to see if that is really going to work. But I think people are, as they age, are aging better also and taking better care of themselves physically and know what they should be doing. So possibly the person who's in their 60s and early 70s now may be in a better health state than they were 20, 30 years ago. A lot is mindset.
And we have to remember there are a lot of older parents taking care of disabled children. So when you look at the disabled population, often it's the parents that have continued the commitment beyond when the child turns 18. And in fact, there's a lot of discussion about how people are going to deal with that issue, because the caregivers of the older generation won't be here forever.
And Peggy's right. You know, the jobs of yesterday are not the same jobs as today. They're less physically toiling. You know, the factory workers, and where you're working for 40 years moving metal beams around. Now, you know, the jobs themselves are less taxing on the bodies. The result is people are living much longer and will continue to live much longer. But bodies do wear out. So, I mean, providing that care isn't going to be just till somebody reaches 80. It might be till they're 100. So, you know, if we don't prepare as a state and a country for this aging population, we're going to be in big trouble. So we're saying let's get ahead of the game now, and it won't be a panic situation later.
We're talking about AARP Wisconsin's proposal for a state caregiver's tax credit, and I believe that would be up to $1,000 annually. Helen, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, how much that could potentially cost the state, and whether that cost, I don't know, makes it likely or unlikely that state lawmakers will consider it.
Well, you know, $1,000 sounds like a lot of money, and it depends on how much it costs, really depends on how many people apply for the benefit. But the truth of the matter is, it's very cheap compared to the fact that for an older person, it's like $2,500 a month to be on family care. It's over $4,000 a month to have the state pay for them to be in a nursing home. So giving up $1,000 to support somebody so that they stay off programs, I think, is a wise investment because, you know, when you look at spending, you look at the revenue that comes in, you look at the money that goes out, and there'll be lawmakers that will say to us, that's expensive, we're going to lose that revenue, and I'm going to turn around and say, but look what it saves you in the long run.
And on the federal level, another effort that Senator Baldwin is behind is called the Credit for Caring Act. And this is kind of parallel to what the state would be doing, only this is a $3,000 tax credit that would go directly to family caregivers to offset the cost of any devices and things that they buy directly related to that family caregiving. And it would be in the form of a $3,000 credit. Again, bipartisan support from both sides. They all see the value of it. An AARP poll of likely voters found that 87% of likely voters age 50 and older support tax credits for caregivers. So that's a mandate. That's almost 9 out of 10 saying, you know, we got to do something to help them.
Helen, did you have something to add to that?
I was going to say, Jim is right. It is out there on the federal level. But I'm more optimistic about us getting it passed at the state level. We've had some interest from the speaker. Last year he did an Alzheimer's and dementia task force. There has been a move this year. Part of our package will include other things that that committee recommended. I think we have a better chance right here in the state because given the batting average of the federal government at the moment, I think I'd bet on our boys and girls in Madison before I bet on the feds.
Helen, you mentioned Speaker Robin Voss, I believe, you're hoping will support it. Any other lawmakers you're talking to?
Well, you know, the person who's really taken the lead on this this year has been Representative Sharansky. And he has put together, there's a whole series of issues that include this. It includes some of the dementia respite care, some of the dementia crisis intervention money. It includes us starting to talk about palliative care, not only for death and dying, but also around issues of chronic diseases. It's a whole package that's going to go together. And I think we'll do well in the assembly. We have our work cut out for us in the Senate, but, you know, we'll keep trying.
That's Helen Marks-Dix, State Issues Advocacy Director for AARP Wisconsin, here with us today to talk about efforts to better support family caregivers in Wisconsin and the U.S. Also joining us is Jim Flaherty from AARP and Peggy Herbeck from the La Crosse County ADRC. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. I want to pivot now and talk about the other issue or legislative issue that you're bringing up this year in Wisconsin. It was mentioned earlier, the CARE Act. Helen, I wonder if you can kind of explain, you know, what the CARE Act is, what it entails.
Well, the CARE Act is relatively simple. It means when a person goes into the hospital, they would be asked if they have a caregiver, and they would say yes or no, and they would be asked to give permission to give the caregiver information. We have a lot of problems where people are transferred between hospitals and nursing homes and step-down units and stuff, and the caregiver doesn't even know where they are. So the hospital, once they had that information, would have to let the caregiver know about discharge planning and would let the caregiver know what the follow-up plans are, and if they needed some kind of training, they would provide that training. And so it's relatively simple. There are no HIPAA problems because the patient voluntarily gives out the information. And I sometimes hear that good hospitals already do this. Well, wonderful for good hospitals, but let's make sure every hospital is doing it.
Yeah,
right.
Jim.
And as Peggy mentioned earlier, a lot of these folks are providing this care, and it escalates the level of care that you've got to perform, and you just, in a lot of cases, you have absolutely no idea what you're doing. You're just trying to do the best you can with the resources you have. This would say it's a mandatory conversation. Let's talk about wound care. Let's talk about complex medication management. Let's talk about when the discharge happens, how the family caregiver can feel very comfortable in the confines of the loved one's home, being able to make sure that they're doing the right thing for them. They certainly don't want to do the wrong thing. And this just says, all it does is require a conversation. Bring in the caregiver, make sure they know what they're doing. And, I think it's almost common sense to say that this is a good idea. It's passed already. CARE Act is already passed in several states. 39 states already. So, and it's bipartisan in the states that it has passed in. So this is never going to be a Democrat or Republican issue. This is everybody.
Peggy, I wonder what your thoughts are on this idea of making sure that family caregivers are in the room when these conversations happen.
I think that is really, really important, that oftentimes when someone is in a hospital bed, they will agree, yes, of course I'll do it, of course I'll do it, yes, I understand, because they want to get back home into their own environment. So having that caregiver physically present to hear what the cares are, maybe do a teach back that they're shown how to do it, and then they demonstrate back that they really know how to physically perform the task. And the other thing that many hospitals have are care coordinators that once the person's home, they'll check back in with that person, but now with this care act, potentially with the caregiver also. How is it really going? Sometimes folks think they can do it all on their own, and they get home and discover, this is more than I can take on. It's really just too much for me. And that's when we hope that the hospitals have given those folks our name to call the Aging and Disability Resource Center. We work really hand in hand with hospital discharge planners right now. And sometimes we just let people know we're there in the background, that if it doesn't work, that we do know about other additional services and supports that can help make their individual family safe.
And what the hospitals get out of it is reducing readmissions. So it's like if you're telling the caretaker this is how to treat it, all goes well, they have a home visit, bang, then all of a sudden you reduce your readmission rate of having to bring that person back because the caregiver didn't have the right kind of training. So they get a win out of this as well.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask how this would impact hospitals, because I can also maybe see how it could be extra work for hospital staff. I wonder, Helen, what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I don't think it really is that much extra work because, when you're admitted to a hospital now, you're supposed to be asked if you have a healthcare agent and if you have a power of attorney for healthcare. So it's one more question on the admission questionnaire, which, takes what? Another 30 seconds. And then on the discharge side, most hospitals have nurse educators, and they have people that do try to make it possible for people to leave the hospital and stay away from the hospital. So I think it would be a shift somewhat in the workload, but I don't think it is a major expense to the hospitals to have somebody doing that type of work. I want to also say something on behalf of as the oldest person in the room and the one with the silver hair, I have to say older people are very proud, and we don't want to admit that we need help. And so getting the caregiver involved when the person is probably at their most nervous and their most concerned is a good idea, because many of us would take the discharge, the written discharge plan, go home, put it under the recliner sheet, and tell the kids it's fine. I can handle it. It's just fine. So actually having the caregiver in all those discussions as we go along will really improve the care for the person and get around that too proud to ask for help issue.
It's your stubborn generation, Helen.
We are.
Nothing but trouble.
I really do think it probably would lessen their workload, because if they get that name right at admission, then they don't have to try and figure it out with the person as they're experiencing their hospital stay. They can start trying to have that person involved and be there at the hospital when the doctor comes through, or at least when they're doing the teaching at discharge. So I think it really would lessen the workload almost instead of make it harder.
I agree with Peggy. You know, we go back to the penny wise, pound foolish. It's the same with red tape. A little bit of red tape now on the front end will help mitigate a lot of red tape later on if that person has to come back to the hospital because of whatever reason. So, you know, I think hospitals should all be in favor of this. I think it's a really good thing for Wisconsin, and we hope we become the 40th state this fall to pass the CARE Act.
Yeah, Helen, I wonder if you could talk about, you mentioned 39 other states have already passed this legislation. How are we seeing that play out in those states? Has it caused a ripple, I wonder?
Well, I haven't really looked at the statistics about how it's affecting the readmission statistics, but I have to say in the states where we're now working on implementation and making sure the regulations and hospital regulations are there to make it work, it seems to be doing very, very well. In some states, they were able to do it by regulatory rather than full legislative act, but it seems to be working well, and nobody who's done it has undone it. Which is always a telling point, because sometimes you have a great idea, and the minute you put it into effect, you discover all kinds of problems. That isn't true with this. People have been very satisfied with the amount of knowledge that the hospitals are giving them and very happy with the care.
And if the hospital's response is, hey, we're already doing that, as you said earlier, fantastic. Then you don't have an extra layer of red tape. This is trying to catch folks who fall through the safety net of like, oh my gosh, this caregiver is now taking home the patient and they have absolutely no idea how to care for these wounds. So it's a safety net to make sure that some of these patients don't fall through the cracks. But as you said, the good hospital systems, a lot of them are already doing it.
And the difference in medical care, it's really changed over the last 20, 30 years, that in the past you would stay 5-10 days in the hospital and you weren't going home with as much really intensive cares that have to be performed. Now people are discharged very rapidly and they're usually still somewhat weakened. They need somebody who knows what they're doing.
Peggy Herbeck, supervisor of La Crosse County's Aging and Disability Resource Center, is here with us today to talk about the importance of family caregivers and how the state and federal government can better support them. Also joining us is Jim Flaherty and Helen Marks Dix from AARP Wisconsin. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about AARP's efforts to introduce legislation to support family caregivers. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers. And if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about state efforts to help family caregivers and how the state can help those caring for an aging parent, spouse, or other loved one in the Cooley region. Almost 600,000 Wisconsinites are a caregiver for a family member or a loved one, and AARP Wisconsin is hoping to create tax credits and other resources to help more residents care for aging family members. Joining us to talk about the role of family caregivers and the economic impact they have are Jim Flaherty, Communications Director for AARP Wisconsin, Helen Marks Dix, State Issues Advocacy Director for the organization, and Peggy Herbeck, Supervisor of La Crosse County Aging and Disability Resource Center. You know, we're talking about all these issues that could really help family caregivers. And, you know, Peggy, I wonder if you can talk a little bit more about, you know, what resources maybe exist right now for family caregivers in La Crosse County.
In La Crosse County, we have a variety of resources. We have many different support groups for caregivers. Sometimes it's targeted more with a particular disease or diagnosis that someone's dealing with, and sometimes it's more of a generic group that offers support other people in the same boat, that sometimes it just has a lot more validity if you know someone else is dealing with a situation. We have a memory cafe here in La Crosse for individuals that are dealing with dementia or other some type of form of Alzheimer's, and that's once a month on the last Tuesday of the month up at Black River Beach House, and it's a lovely meal at noontime, and then some type of a guest speaker or entertainment. There's a chance for caregivers to get to come together in a group setting and bring their loved one. It's just great fun. I would highly recommend it, that people really enjoy going there and having that time with other caregivers. Sometimes we offer different support groups, such as Powerful Tools for Caregivers. It's a very evidence-based, short session where you come and learn how to take your care of yourself as a caregiver, and then during that time frame, the person you're caring for, we try and provide respite. This is offered at various times during the year when there is enough interest. The Aging and Disability Resource Center has been involved with different support things such as Tai Chi or different low-impact exercise groups, but oftentimes it's to give that person a break. What we're looking for is that break away from the stress of caregiving and maybe making some friendships and have someone, a phone buddy that maybe you can call. So we also work very closely with the Alzheimer's Association with any of their educational groups and supports, and the hospitals offer quite a bit also.
What do you think is the biggest gap maybe in resources? What do you think is the biggest maybe unmet need for family caregivers?
I think for family caregivers it would be two things. If they are outside here in La Crosse, mainly the main metropolitan area, transportation can be very, very difficult, especially if the caregiver doesn't feel comfortable driving anymore to get somewhere to go have that break or come together with other friends in the community and caregivers. Even though the family or their family support is providing the majority of it, when they need a paid caregiver, there really is a shortage in our community of folks that are trained and available to come into homes to provide that additional, maybe more intensive personal care. And that's a nationwide crisis, and hopefully there's been some legislation that just went through to offer to the public support, the family care program that's paid for with public dollars, that the money to go directly to the staff that they're employing to raise their hourly wage so that it can be a livable wage. Many people who provide this care, they love what they're doing. They are caregivers. They want to help people in the community, but you have to make a livable wage for your family. So those would be the two things that I would see are the crisis to make all this work is the transportation and enough caregivers to offer families the backup they need.
Peggy, you mentioned that, you know, we have seen a little bit of work on maybe some of these areas, but Jim, do you think that in general, we're talking about these sorts of issues for the aging population and for the people who are carrying them? Are we seeing these issues talked about on the state and federal level?
We are more and more. We're bringing up, that's one of the reasons AARP is at the table here, and we're rattling a lot of cages at both the state and federal level. And they are talking about it. And some of the legislation that's coming forward is saying, okay, if we want to save big chunks of money, if we want to take care of people as they age, we've got to address Social Security, we've got to address Medicare, we've got to address family caregiving, because these are problems that are going to get worse, not better. So I think there is a conversation, but it won't happen unless we all participate in that. You know, we encourage your listeners, you know, let your legislators know how important this issue is. You know, it should rise to the top. I'm going to throw you one statistic. On average, family caregivers spend about $7,000 a year out of pocket on costs related to caregiving. And for low-income families, they spend an average of 44% of their income yearly on caregiving. That's almost half of their money. So this, I'm not going to call it a crisis, but I will say it is, could reach a crisis stage unless that conversation elevates very soon to a higher level. And I think it is.
I also think people are under a misconception that Medicare will pay for a lot of things like nursing home and long-term care, and there are some noticeable deficiencies in the Medicare program, and one is the lack of any kind of funding and support for long-term care. And so the only government programs are for low-income people, which leaves, you know, a huge, the middle class, the upper class, you know, the whole range, the near poor, of trying to struggle with this issue on their own.
And sometimes people are afraid to reach out, knowing that if they reach out for any help, someone will come in and take their home, or they'll be forced to use all their money. And basically what we want the word to get out is that Aging and Disability Resource Centers were really put in place to help the middle income and upper income older person look at their resources and never need public assistance or slow down that need by offering them good supports in their own home or community, wherever they want to be living. So oftentimes that fear is what stops people from calling, and there shouldn't be any fear. We're a free, reliable, highly trained service that lets people think about what they could do for themselves in their own home.
Yeah, Helen, I want to return to something that you were talking about, the fact that, you know, these Medicare, Medicaid sometimes don't offer the resources that are needed or the funding. And, you know, Medicare and Medicaid continue to be a controversial topic, that funding. I wonder how you see some of these pieces of legislation that AARP is supporting, you know, things like these tax credits, how that might be part of the solution for thinking about the long-term planning of these programs.
Well, I think it all ties together. I think we have to take a look about whether we are really committed to keeping people in the community, which is where they want to be. How we're going to fund it? Are we funding it out of the generosity of family members? Are we going to give people a little boost like the tax credit? Or, you know, what are we going to do? I don't really see a lot of expansion of benefits at this particular point, because we are now in one of our thriftier, more austere times with government funding. But, you know, it really is something that if we talk about it enough, people are going to come up with meaningful solutions and ways to help each other.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the role of family caregivers and how the state and federal government can better support them. We're here with Helen Marks-Dix from AARP Wisconsin, Jim Flaherty, Communications Director for the organization, and Peggy Herbeck from the La Crosse County ADRC. And, you know, Jim, it's kind of been mentioned throughout some of the priorities for AARP on the federal level, but I wonder if you can just, you know, give a brief description of some of the pieces of legislation you guys are supporting.
At the federal level or
yes.
Both? Okay. At the federal level, we're supporting something called the RAISE Act, and RAISE is an acronym that stands for Recognize, Assist, Include, Support, and Engage. So it's the RAISE Family Caregivers Act. And this really, all it does is say we need to get all stakeholders together and have a conversation about what the future of caregiving in the United States is going to look like. And this legislation, which has passed the Senate and is in committee in the House, would set up the groundwork to get that rolling. This is not an issue that people can say, oh, that affects that guy over there, not me. There are 40 million family caregivers in the United States and about 600,000 here in Wisconsin. It impacts just about everybody now or will in the future. This is not something that we can turn our backs on and say, you know, that's the other guy's problem, because this affects everybody. To start a conversation now so that we're prepared as we get older will be unbelievably helpful. The CARE Act, which Helen alluded to earlier, is also an acronym. It stands for Caregiver, Advise, Record, Enable. So that's CARE, the CARE Act, would tell hospitals that you've got to have conversations with caregivers before they are released so that they can do things like wound care and medication management. So there's state and federal legislation running parallel, along with a couple of tax credits to help caregivers, that we are going to be doing a full court press on this fall in the state legislature and going forward in Congress. Because these are real live issues that are affecting everybody, and we say they are not partisan issues by any means.
Yeah, Helen, I know Jim brings up an issue that, you know, this affects a lot of different people. And you mentioned that you have a personal story of being a family caregiver and finding yourself in that role. I wonder what you can talk about, you know, how that experience maybe prompted you to really want to work on these issues.
Well, it really did make me love ADRCs and some of this legislation. I moved my mother from Philadelphia because my siblings wanted to put her in a nursing home, and I'm a big proponent of care in the community, so I moved her out here, put her in an apartment on all one level, and went out to hire services. At the time, I was working as an elder law attorney. This is about 12 years ago, and I knew everybody in the aging community in Dane County, but we didn't have an ADRC yet. So I have to tell you, I was absolutely overwhelmed. And I figured, if I'm overwhelmed, who knew all the programs, knew all the people in the agencies, the people in the agencies bent over backwards to help me because I had been so active in the training of many of the staff on legal issues, I was just overwhelmed. It was just absolutely overwhelming. And it was very, very emotional. It also had a very dramatic impact on my law practice, because my mother didn't see why she should pay somebody to drive her when she had a daughter. And so, you know, it's like, yeah, of course you can come in the middle of the day. You know, Mom, I have a court hearing. No, you know, why am I paying good money when I could have a daughter do it? And so, you know, there's really sometimes a disconnect between what parents think is reasonable to ask for and what kids are capable of giving. But it really is, I'm very sympathetic when I hear people that haven't asked for help, because it is just overwhelming. And as we talked about before, sometimes it sneaks up on you. You start doing the little things and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you sit down and you say, oh my God, what am I doing? ADRCs are wonderful, because if all you do is call the ADRC and say, help, they'll get you to talk to somebody that will take the help to define it as a greater problem with more specifics and tell you what resources there are in the community. But I was lucky. My mother had money, so I could hire someone to drive. I could, you know, hire someone to take her to doctor's appointments and stuff. But it still was a major challenge for somebody who is very familiar with the whole system. So I sit there and wonder, how do people do it that just back into these activities? And thank God for the ADRCs.
Peggy, I wonder if this is a common story that you hear.
Oh, it's so common, and it happens to the best of us, that you can know all about a program, but when it's your loved one, it's very, very emotional. And people sometimes come to us in true crisis. They've just reached the point that they can't do it anymore on their own. They're feeling some guilt about that. They're totally worn out, and it's just like they're grabbing a hold of a lifeline. And that's when our social workers and options counselors, they sit down with the person and say, that's okay, we're here to help you. We'll stay with you and work through all your different issues till you feel that you're comfortable with what you need for your loved one. And we see this a lot, that people sometimes wait too long to call us, but they don't realize they're becoming so distraught and coming to the crisis level. But That's what we're there for, and we're just kind of hand in hand with them to get through the system. And as Helen was saying, she knew all the programs and all the players. There are a lot of programs out there to help people, but it can be just massively confusing to someone if they don't have a person to help them get through that red tape.
Family caregivers obviously fill a lot of roles, whether it's transportation, that sort of thing. But, you know, they also, as has been talked about, kind of play a crucial role in kind of health care for these individuals and making sure they get to doctor's appointments and medication management, things like that. So in a lot of ways, I imagine this is kind of a conversation about our healthcare system. Jim, I wonder how that maybe impacts this conversation, because healthcare is such a controversial issue that is kind of in flux right now on the federal and federal level.
It absolutely is. Long-term care is kind of the forgotten arm of healthcare. You know, everybody thinks about Medicare and Part A, B, B, D, and C, and they think about nursing homes. In-home family care living is something that doesn't rise to the top politically. It's not a sexy topic for legislators to talk about, but it is as important as anything we talk about in terms of the Affordable Care Act or any changes in the healthcare system. This is an issue that it's time to have this conversation now. We probably should have had it 20 years ago, but at least we're having it now. And it absolutely is interwoven into all of the healthcare debates that we're having in Washington. Wisconsin has a fantastic program called Family Care, which provides nursing home type services right in the home. This is a model that should be used across the country, and it's expanded now into, I believe, all 72 counties. Okay. Wisconsin has a long history of helping folks age with dignity and taking care of our elderly that other states should replicate. But at least we're doing what we can. But it is sometimes the forgotten arm of the healthcare system.
And Wisconsin actually has a pretty good reputation. We started the ADRCs. They're now spreading across the country. This last budget, we got permanent funding for the dementia care specialists, and we're doing dementia-friendly communities, which is a program that started here in Wisconsin. So in many ways, Wisconsin has a long history of being among the leaders in being innovative in how we handle some of these issues. But, you know, we're running into that joint issue of the number of people and the number of dollars.
And, you know, we're talking about how, you know, kind of differences in how Wisconsin's dealing with this issue, how we're looking, hearing about it, how it's being dealt with on the national level. Because this is a medical issue, Jim, do you feel like, is this going to be possible to pass these issues as standalone issues, or is this going to be needed to be part of maybe a larger healthcare reform bill?
Well, I'm going to say that it is going to get through one way or another. You know, what happens is people will tell us, we'll go on the road, AARP, and they're like, oh, AARP, do this for us. You know, we hope you do this, we hope you do that. AARP is all of us. We are not just a group sitting in Madison lobbying for legislation. We are 840,000 members in Wisconsin and 39 million members across the country. The voices have to be the voices of the people. We strongly encourage your listeners, hey, call your local legislator. Tell them, you heard it on Newsmakers. This hits home for them. Go after the CARE Act. Pass it. Go after the RAISE Act. Pass it. They've got to hear from everybody. The way to have seismic changes in policy and legislation is all grassroots. It has to come from the ground up. So, yes, I do believe these will pass one way or another, whether it's standalone, whether it's part of a bigger package. But my hope is that the groundswell of support will come from the people.
Helen, I wonder if there are any, you talked about how Wisconsin has, pretty good reputation when it comes to, thinking about the aging population. I wonder if there are any other states or countries even maybe that have a good model for family caregivers and are doing things that are, right.
Well, that's a really hard question to answer because, like you say, in many countries, it's woven together with their healthcare system. So you're talking about a healthcare system that pays for these services, that pays for the additional help coming in, that does the training. And so it's very hard for me to compare apples and oranges and talk about healthcare across national lines. I will say this, I think Wisconsin is willing to have these conversations on both sides of the aisle. Now, how much money they're willing to spend is another question, but that's my job. My job is to convince them that this is money well spent and that it really helps everybody. You know, it's kind of interesting because in the Speaker's Task Force last year, which was bipartisan, every single member of the task force had a parent with Alzheimer's. And that really changed the whole tone. It changed the whole way people look at things. So to a large part, you know, the fact that so many people's lives have been impacted, I don't know how often I go out and speak about this and people come up to me afterwards and tell me their story. And it doesn't matter what age they are. It doesn't matter what gender they are. It doesn't matter what their political persuasion is. It really is, this affects me.
Yeah, and the difference with this, you know, when we talk about social safety net programs and outreach and legislation, and the first thing is, you know, the dollar signs, cha-ching, what's it going to cost us to provide a social safety net? This is a social safety net program that is going to save the state of Wisconsin and the country of the U.S. lots and lots and lots of money in the long run, because you're keeping people out of long-term care facilities and providing care in the home. That's a gigantic savings. So this is one of those social safety net programs that there are no losers on. It's a win-win-win for everybody.
We've been talking with Jim Flaherty, Communications Director for AARP Wisconsin, Helen Marks Dix, State Issues Advocacy Director for the organization, and Peggy Herbeck, Supervisor at La Crosse County Aging and Disability Resource Center, about the impact of family caregivers and how Wisconsin and the federal government can better support them. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.